This is Culture and Conversations. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you part of the conversation. We want to continue to thank you guys for your support of Culture and Conversations. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we're doing. If you're listening to this for the first time, be sure to subscribe to the podcast through your particular podcast catcher. And if you need the instructions on how to do that, you know, just Google how to subscribe to a podcast and it'll be out there for you guys. But thank you guys for supporting. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for taking the time to share this content with you, with your friends on social media. We appreciate that. We've got a great show planned for you. I've got my good friend, Muay Thai world champion kickboxer, Chike Lindsay, stopping by to talk about his journey into the world of Muay Thai and how he became a world champion kickboxer. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Yes, my name is Jameson Smallwood, and this is Culture and Conversations. We appreciate you guys supporting the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you guys for following on Facebook, on Instagram, and staying in touch with the podcast through the podcast subscriptions. It helps us when we are able to connect with you because it gets the content from me to you, and we appreciate that so much. So I've been following a lot of stories in pop culture right now. I've got Kanye West saying outlandish stuff, but Kanye's not that interesting right now because as of the recording of this podcast, Kevin Hart has just found out who it was that was allegedly extorting him for money. What happened was Kevin got into trouble when he got caught cheating on video with somebody who wasn't his wife, right? And someone actually recorded that video without Kevin knowing it and was using that video to extort him and to try to get money from him through blackmail. So police and apparently the FBI allegedly did an investigation, and it was concluded that JT Jackson, a friend of Kevin Hart's, was the one who actually was the one chopping the video around trying to extort Kevin for money. And it was fascinating to me and interesting to me because this guy apparently was friends with Kevin Hart and he had dealings with Kevin and they knew each other, but something happened apparently in the relationship that led to this gentleman, JT Jackson, allegedly deciding to concoct this scheme to catch Kevin cheating and set this guy up so that he would be embarrassed and possibly have the leverage necessary to extort Kevin out of money. So it just leads me into thoughts about friendships and what genuine friendship is. It's really tough when you have people around you who feel like they're owed something or that they're jealous of you or that they're not getting from the relationship what they're owed. And I don't know how to tell people to manage that other than for people to be very cautious about who they have in their life. I have had experiences where people have come into my life through my church work and they decided that they were going to try to latch on to me and draw something from me that they thought was here. And I just had to deal with that and tell them no and set boundaries and make sure that they understood what type of friendship it was going to be. And what ultimately happened was when that person didn't get from me what they thought they were going to get from me, then they didn't want to be friends anymore, quote unquote. So it's always a part of the existence of people to have to manage their friendships and manage their relationships. And unfortunately, somebody with the resources, the wealth and the celebrity, the name recognition of a Kevin Hart, he's going to have a harder time than most people would simply because he has more that people are envious of. He has more that people would covet. He has more that people would be jealous of. So I think that's what ultimately led to this JT Jackson situation. So if you've got genuine friends in your life, to end this kind of point on a high note, if you got genuine friends in your life, then make sure that you're reaching out to them and letting them know that you love them and telling them that you are appreciative of their friendship and how they are reaching out to you and loving on you with no agenda other than your well-being. And I think that's just a cautionary tale, once again, of being careful of who's in your circle, who has access to you, and what it is that they really want from you. If they want you, then great. If they don't want you, well, keep it moving. So, well, speaking of friends, I've got a great friend who decide to stop by Culture and Conversations and play along with me and sit down and talk a little bit about his background and his journey and his experience as a Muay Thai world champion kickboxer. And my friend's name is Chike Lindsay. If you Google Chike, you'll see that he is an established world champion kickboxer, and he has numerous titles that he owns. And those titles did come up for a second as we were talking in the conversation. But I think the part that was fascinating to me is that Chike, to my knowledge, was the first person in my group of friends to get a Wikipedia entry. And that doesn't just happen by chance. You have to do something noteworthy to the culture, to society, to get a Wikipedia entry. And it was really cool to see him have one. And I never forget Googling him and seeing all this video footage of him fighting people and knocking people out, you know, to come up. And Chike shared his experience with me. He was gracious in talking with me. And I think you guys are going to enjoy this conversation with Chike Lindsay. Have you ever wanted to punch people in the face for a living? Well, my next guest woke up one day and decided to do just that. He is a world champion kickboxer, and I'm glad I'm able to call him my friend. I'd like to welcome to the conversation, Chike Lindsay. Chike, how are you doing, man?
Pretty good, Jameson. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. I thought that was a pretty good introduction, man. You know,
I like it.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Man, you were one of the people when I came up with the idea for Culture and Conversations that crossed my mind, because you are somebody who I went to, you know, college with. I knew from my past life as a Georgia Southern Eagle, and yet you had gone on to do some amazing stuff. I think one of the things that I told you a few years ago was that you're the first person I knew who had a Wikipedia entry. And you got that entry because you decided to pursue a professional career as a Muay Thai kickboxer. And I wanted to ask you a couple questions kind of to bring people into your world and just into your thought process. The first question would be, man, what inspired you to decide to pursue becoming a professional kickboxer?
Well, you know what? I never really thought about it as a kid.
Okay.
I never really thought about it. I've been doing martial arts since I was 10, and I still never really thought about it. And when I first started training Muay Thai, actually, I was just going to do the free lesson. I was never going to come back. That was my plan. And I thought it was kind of cool, but it was whatever, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing the coach said was, how much do you weigh and how old are you? And I told him, and he said, you have a future in the sport. I'll move you up to fight in, K1 Max. And these were like, K1 Max was like this huge kind of Japanese tournament. It was almost like a real life blood sport, right?
Oh, wow.
Cause the idea of K1 is like all these fighting styles start with K, like karate, kickboxing, kung fu. And you're supposed to bring all these guys together in this unified world set of striking sports.
Oh, wow.
From all over the world. And like, they have these epic intros, like with this lady, like screaming your name and saying what country you're representing. And it was a really cool scene. So, that was, you know, something that I really liked to watch as a fan. And I didn't even consider the prospect of doing something like that. So after my first lesson, he was like, yeah, that's what you're going to be doing.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like...
Let me give this a shot.
Yeah, that's like the Kumite, man.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's the thing that always amazes me about a lot of these different stories of people doing amazing things, is that it started with somebody believing them and someone taking an interest in them and helping them get exposed to the discipline that they went on to pursue. You know, I know you just, you said you've been doing martial arts since you were 10. Was there someone in your life that, you know, exposed you to martial arts and said, hey, we want you to, you know, do this to learn about this and to use this as an activity to keep you sort of busy as a kid with extracurricular stuff?
No, actually it was exactly the opposite, right? Like I would just kind of see stuff and emulate it. And I taught myself how to do martial arts to the point that everybody thought that I was doing stuff. starting when I was like 5, right?
Yeah.
So everybody thought that I did karate, and I was like, I moved a little bit better than most of the kids who were taking formal lessons. And then when I got to about 10 years old, my mom realized, like, okay, he's been doing this shit on his own for like 5 years.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to stop. So let's just go ahead and put him in some lessons. So. Yeah.
If you keep on kicking enough, at some point somebody's going to be like, you know what, maybe he's pretty good at kicking, so let's teach him how to kick and see if we can make something out of this. So,
exactly.
But, I mean, I think that's...
And it's funny, she actually, like, later on when I got older, she apologized that she didn't put me in martial arts earlier, like when I was a kid when I first asked.
Wow.
But, you know, in the end, I kind of prefer it this way, right? Because I think the thing about martial arts that's interesting is it's a really individual journey. Even though there's a lot of teamwork and camaraderie and everybody has to work together in order to elevate themselves,
okay,
there's still a lot of individualism, right? There's still a style that's going to be a little bit unique to you. There's going to be an understanding of the things that you're doing that's a little bit unique to you and all based on your experiences and kind of forcing myself early to really break things down by myself. I think that really shaped how I think about martial arts in general.
Well, I think that's a great metaphor for life, is that there is a path that you can go on in life that'll get you to some of the same destinations, but that's boring and that's not necessarily how everybody's life goes. So, you know, when you take that metaphor that you described there in martial arts and press it into the world, I can agree with that. You know, we often are on a journey trying to get to similar goals, you know, in terms of self-actualization. But at the same time, how we get there, that's going to be a personalized experience. And I guess your point is absolutely right with martial arts. You have to learn how to, you know, move, how to perform techniques and to master those techniques, and your understanding of your body relative to the technique and the discipline that you're pursuing, I guess that is something that's going to be individualistic.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, you obviously trained since you were 10 and you always had a talent or interest in martial arts. You know, at what point, you know, post Georgia Southern, so I'm assuming this is around 2005, 2006, 2007. Did you decide that, you know, I'm going to try and actually do this professionally as a Muay Thai kickboxer?
So yeah, that was pretty much right when I got to Tech. I think I was like, what, maybe 2003?
Oh, wow.
I think it was about 2003. Yeah, either 2003 or 2004, but 2004 at the latest. But yeah, so that's when I had that first lesson that I was telling you about.
Oh, nice.
And the funny thing is, the reason why I had that first lesson in the first place was because I was at Georgia Tech hitting the heavy back, and this girl came up to me and asked me what kind of style I did. She asked me if it was Muay Thai, because the way I moved looked very similar to Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And when she first started talking, she was cute. So when I first started talking to me, I said, okay, wow, this thing's finally paying off. Like, usually you don't get girls in martial arts, right? That's what I'm training it for. Yeah. That's what you play basketball for. That's what you play football for, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, after all these years, things are finally going my way. And then she goes, because my boyfriend teaches Muay Thai at this gym. And exactly. That's exactly how I felt. There was this collective O in my soul, right? So for months, I just blew it off, right? Because I was trying to get with this girl still.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, like, do I completely blow this off and just never go to the gym and just try and steal this guy's girlfriend?
Okay.
Or do I actually, take a lesson and whatever. And I decided to go ahead and just try it out.
Yeah.
And I figured I could try it out, then never come back, and then still try and steal this guy's girlfriend. But then after I tried it out, the guy said, hey, I want you to fight in the tournament where the best fighters in the world compete.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you know what? I can get a different girl.
That's a great story. Most things guys do have something to do with women. You know, either it's us trying to get women or us trying to get away from women. But it has something to do with women. You know, I know for me, to juxtapose that story with the story about trying to get a chick, I developed, you know, the ability to write poetry. You know, I cultivated the talent to write writing poetry because I was trying to catch the attention of a young lady at the time. And I can just see you, you know, hitting a heavy bag and then this chick walking up to you saying, you know what, you like, you know what you're doing there, you know, and you're just like, yes, it finally paid.
Exactly.
It finally paid off. So was it just that much of that? Go ahead, JK.
I totally agree with that comment about everything, or the vast majority of things having to do with women.
Yeah, man.
I actually talked to one of my friends. I said, you know, if we have sons, when we have kids, that's how we're going to get them to college.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how we're going to make sure that they don't mess up in high school. Like, look, don't get a girl pregnant in high school because you won't get more girls in one place than you will ever see in your entire life in college.
Exactly.
So you need to go to college, and you need to make sure that you don't get anybody pregnant.
Yeah, that's it. Dodge all of those teenage traps, man. You know.
Exactly.
You know. So it was that much of an accident then, really, Muay Thai for you? You know, you didn't have a particular love of Muay Thai. You just were exposed to it at that time where you were open to picking a discipline to practice.
Well, actually, no, it's a coincidence because I was looking for Muay Thai.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was looking for Muay Thai at the time. I was looking for either Muay Thai or Kyokushin. Kyokushin Karate.
Okay.
Which is like this hard style karate. Actually, the name translates to ultimate truth. And it's one of the styles. Right? Isn't that the coolest name?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was one of the styles that was also big in K-1 as well.
Ah, okay.
So, like I said, K-1 started becoming like this obsession of mine, K-1 Max in particular, mm-hmm. and I was watching that a ton. And this was around the time that Bukau came on the scene.
Okay.
And, you know, of course he was like this kind of world ambassador from Muay Thai at that time. So I started getting a huge interest in Muay Thai partly because of that. Because of my interest in K-1 and seeing what Bukau was doing on the K-1 circuit.
Okay.
So at that time, I was looking around for Muay Thai, but I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anybody who looked like they were that good, and I had kind of given up on it. And then right at that moment, you know, somebody asked me what I was doing and told me there was a Muay Thai gym locally.
Oh, wow. You know, that's amazing. You know, sometimes it's just serendipity where you're just in the right place at the right time, you know. Now, what was it about Muay Thai that made you prefer that style? Was it simply because those guys in K-1 were using Muay Thai and that's something that you liked? Or did you have a deeper, you know, a deeper reason for picking Muay Thai as your discipline?
Well, that was part of it. Another part of it was, so around 2004, the UFC was very, very early still.
Yeah, yeah.
And before that, it was even worse. So around 2004, you had this generation of fighters they call the new breed. And I don't know if you're too familiar, but the new breed of fighters was these fighters that could punch and kick as well as could grapple. Before 2004, nobody could do both. Either you're a wrestler or you're a striker. And there was this kind of war. It was like the Montes and the Capulets, right? It was like, you're either a striker or a grappler, and you got to choose one. And the grapplers were all saying that, you know, all fights are going to end up on the ground. And I was way more naturally gifted at striking than grappling, so since everybody was trying to choose sides, I was kind of stuck on that side. And hearing all these grapplers say that, you know, every striker would lose in a match with a grappler because they just get to the ground. And what I realized by watching a lot of fight sports that weren't super restrictive like Taekwondo or whatever,
mm-hmm.
even Taekwondo, honestly, was that the real common thread was that in every fight, there is a clinch. No matter what you try to do, there's always some kind of clinch that happens. And this is when the grappler gets the guy to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily that every fight will go to the ground. It's that every fight will have a clinch. And if a person clinching, if one of the people clinching is good at takedowns, they're going to get them down. And if they're good at groundwork, they're never going to get back up.
I see what you're saying. So you start the fight. The fight starts at the, you know, the fight starts vertically, but there's that clinch that happens inside. And then that's where the guy who can grapple has the advantage because he knows how to take a person down. And to your point, you'll never get up if a guy, you know, is that talented with with grappling.
Now, this is for most striking styles, because most striking styles, when the clinch happens, then it gets broken up. Muay Thai is the only striking style that has strikes specifically tailored to the clinch, that has a whole system of fighting specifically, that's striking-based, specifically designed for that clinching situation. So that's what really attracted me about it, was this idea that this clinch that was inevitable would not necessarily be my demise as a striker, that I could, within the clinch, do damage, do work, and prevent the guy from getting the takedown with strikes, and then get back to a striking range if I wanted to, or finish him there.
That makes sense. So it gave you both disciplines of striking and grappling in one style, and there were also practical applications of striking while you were grappling, and at the same time, you would learn enough about grappling to be able to hold your own in those situations too.
Well, it's a different. I wouldn't really call it grappling per se.
Okay.
I would call the clinching is a clinch, this intermediary space between grappling and striking.
Okay, I got you. So there's really,
and what it allows you to do is maintain striking dominance in that kind of intermediary space.
I got you. So there's a basically a middle ground there, which we're calling clinching, and then there's grappling, which is what happens on the ground, and then there's striking, which happens at a distance. Okay. So there's the three spaces there. That's cool, man. You know, I saw one of your YouTube videos, or maybe it was a promotional video that you had of the highlights, where you knocked a guy out from the clinch, and it's one of my favorite highlights that you've got. You know, is that I can't think of what type of a punch you threw. I think it was like an overhand. It was almost like an overhand right, but it had a little bit of a hook action to it.
It was an elbow.
Okay, that's what it was, an elbow. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That guy, he didn't see that coming at all. And if he did, he couldn't do anything about it, you know. let me not get ahead and start talking about you knocking people out for a living. When did you have your first fight? And take my audience through what that preparation was like and what you were feeling for the first time before you got into the ring.
My first fight was, it was against the guy who was actually the Southeast champion, the Southeast champion, currently at that time. And he had a ton of fights.
Yeah.
And, the preparation was grueling, of course. But I felt really confident still, because one of my buddies and my best training partner when I first started, he had fought the guy before, so I got some like inside information on how he moves and how he fights and stuff like that.
Okay.
So yeah, that fight was actually, it was really good. I lost that fight decision, but I made it such a hard fight that the promoter decided to make me the mandatory challenger for his title.
Oh, wow.
So he had to fight me again. Well, he was supposed to fight me again relatively soon, right after that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of doing it again, he just forfeited the title. So I fought for that title as a vacant title against someone else.
Oh, wow.
And that was my second fight. So my second fight, I won that title by knockout.
Oh, nice.
And then I just started dealing with rack up titles after that.
Nice.
And then I eventually got my rematch against him for another title.
Mm-hmm. How many?
And I beat him in that rematch.
How many titles in all that have you won, Chike?
Let me see. Living room's right downstairs. Let me count.
That's that humble brag right there. Let me go down here and count these trophies on the wall. You know, so many Jameson.
I think it's like seven.
Yeah, go bad, go. These are American titles and also world titles, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Cool, man. Cool. Now, you know, let me ask you this question, because I think this is some of the stuff that I think is gold. You know, obviously, that's a combat sport, Muay Thai. And, you know, kickboxing can be brutal and have moments where it's rough. How do you deal with, you know, taking a punch? And what do you draw on in terms of your discipline and your perspective on your training that helps you overcome those moments where you take a punch or you get knocked out?
Well, there's several levels of defense, right? So there's distance, number one. It's making sure that you give the person less opportunity to hit you. You're throwing your combination in such a way, and you're keeping your movement in such a way that you're just not there as often for the guy to be able to land something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one, is taking less punches by controlling the distance. Number two is your actual defensive ability. So while you're in there, being able to stay in there and be able to block things. And then number two is your ability to actually take the punch, either absorbing it or kind of redirecting a little bit, even when it hits you.
Okay.
And there, you can build your neck so that your head doesn't move as much, because that's what causes a concussion, right? It's when your head moves violently and your brain kind of flops around inside the fluid within your skull, and then it does it so violently that it crashes against the wall of your skull.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can reduce the movement of your head by having a stronger neck so that your head doesn't move so much, then you can reduce those effects. So we do a lot of neck training. You can also make sure that, you know, when the punch hits you, even if it has to hit you, it doesn't hit you super flush.
Mm-hmm.
That way, there's not as much force, doesn't move your head as much, and then, you know, even though you're taking a punch, you're not taking as much damage.
Okay.
So there are a lot of different things we work on to minimize the effects of the strikes that your opponent wants to throw.
Okay. Now, let me ask this question. And I think, you know, you gave me a good technical breakdown of actual fighting and how you take a punch, but, you know, how do you deal with defeat, man? You know, how do you handle losing a fight and then finding the determination to get back in the ring and do it again?
Well, it all comes down to the technical aspect of it, right?
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay.
I feel like inspiration and all that kind of stuff, that should be inside of you anyway. If you don't have the heart to do it, then you shouldn't have the heart to step in there in the first place. And what's happening, right? What's happening in the first place in a fight sport is crazy. You're putting yourself in a situation where the guy is really, really good at hurting people. His only job is to hurt you.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you're not in a mindset where you have enough fire in your belly to do that in the first place, then I don't think you need pep talks to get you through that, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And get you through the defeat and all that. So when we think about defeat, fight sports, I still stick to the technical level, because that fire should be a given, right? The desire should be a given. So we think about why you lost, exactly what happened, how did the fight get away from you, how did you, how are you losing points? If there was a knockout, what was the knockout set up by? Were there habits that were exploited that need to be corrected?
Mm-hmm.
Was it just, because usually it's not like 100% lucky. Usually, you know, it's like maybe 60% luck, and then there was something there. Something there could be corrected, could be changed, and make sure you can minimize that later on.
You know, you sound almost like a therapist with that. You know, I've had some therapy this year and last year too, a little bit of last year. And one of the things my therapist talks about in life is that very approach, you know, fixing things, let's correct things. Let's assume you're normal, but that you have, like you said, habits are being exploited. You've got tendencies that you need to correct. And they take that, and that's the approach that she took with me in helping me deal with the stuff that I was working through at the time and talking about with her at the time. And I'm really shocked to hear you describe it that way, you know, because you're right. It should be given. I never thought about it that way, but it makes perfect sense that, hey, it's a given that you already want to fight. Now the question is, how do you go about fighting as best you possibly can with the tools and the skills that you have, you know? Now,
And so one of my pet peeves, honestly, is when people try to, like, do this kind of any given Sunday kind of, like, inspiration building, right? Like, I feel like everybody should have that in them anyway, you know?
Yeah.
One of my most frustrating moments, actually, was I was in the ring, and I had massive back problems at the time, and I could barely train up, could barely do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent the entire first round figuring out what I could throw and what I could do without feeling that kind of pain.
Sure.
And it got to the point where it could get to the point where I couldn't move. Like, I couldn't even walk away.
Oh, wow.
So I went back to my corner, and there was it was my coach and some random guy, because we didn't find another person. So this random guy was just without the bucket of water and the towel and stuff like that. And I say to my coach, I feel pain when I block.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for strategy, right? I'm not some, like, you know, 26-year-old chick that's trying to, like, discuss my feelings, right? I'm only telling them this because I want a strategic approach to winning the fight. So I say that it hurts when I block, and the random guy says, there is no pain. There's no pain until the fight's over. I'm like, this, you know, Rocky movie? Like, who the fuck are you anyway? Like, your job is to get me water. I don't even know your fucking name. You want to try to give me a pep talk?
Mickey showed up all of a sudden and decided to tell you that tell you to keep going. You know, oh man,
exactly.
So I think that's the part that I wanted to. Let's dig into that. Let's dig into that a bit, man. That's a great story. the rah rah pep talk water guy. You know, he's gonna give you the advice that takes you over the edge, man.
Exactly.
So before we
random move, guy,
some random guy. There's so many parallels to life and fighting, apparently. You know, going through the worst part of your life, and then some guy walks up with random advice, thinks he's going to be the one to get you over the edge. Everybody's like, oh, you're Dr. Phil now? Like, okay. What were you thinking? So how did that fight end up for you? Did you win that fight? Did you lose it on decision? How did that fight end up going for you?
No, I lost that fight on decision.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I game planned the guy, and the game plan worked perfectly. I just couldn't actually throw it. I just can actually do what I need to do without, you know, absorbing too much pain.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, that's the physical part of it. If we were machines, then it would just it wouldn't be as watchable and competitive. It's just, oh, you don't feel any pain, then you just keep on going. But when there's pain, you got to deal with that human side of it. That's the thing that sucks about all types of sports, you know. You know, now you went to school and you got an engineering degree. So do you think that your technical approach to fighting and your, you know, technical assessment of fighting go back to the fact that you're a fairly analytical guy to begin with? And the reason I'm asking that is, obviously there's that, like you described, the any given Sunday nonsense that people bring to sports. Do you think that the reason you never got into that, to that element of sort of trying to be motivated and pep talk and a bunch of rah-rah, is because you are an analytical person at heart?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, being analytical, you can see there's beyond the cloud of, you know, mystic emotions, there's concrete things. There's concrete things that winners have that losers don't.
Sure.
Right? And it's not motivation, right? Motivation is part of it, but it's not purely motivation, right?
Yeah, that's
There's
true.
Technical skill that winners have that losers don't. And being able to see the details, especially in Muay Thai, because in Muay Thai, it's honestly, it's a fairly secretive art. people don't divulge everything. They don't give the keys to the kingdom. You know, you can have the same coach for years and he still won't tell you everything he's doing. To be perfectly honest with you, there are a couple techniques I know only because my trainer was fighting at the, he was still fighting at the time that I started training.
Oh.
And he had me help him train, and I kind of picked them up while he was doing them to me.
I got you.
But he didn't teach me. He didn't teach me these things.
I got you.
And this happens all the time in Muay Thai. Everywhere you go, you can go to Thailand, and it doesn't matter. In Thailand, they're not teaching you secret shit. You got to pick up on the details.
Yeah.
And that analytical approach has really helped me be able to kind of get through that and still be able to pick up on a lot more than most people can pick up on.
Sure.
Because it's not handed to you. Because you have to really take time to study it yourself.
Yeah. What you're describing there is it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, and it reminds me of an anime we used to watch, Rurouni Kenshin. And when Kenshin had to ascend and learn the I can't think of his ultimate technique, but you should have it memorized. But
I used to remember that long ass Japanese name by heart.
But basically that was the thing. He didn't stick around and get the rest of his training. And the only way to learn that last technique was to basically kill his master. And it was the technique was a summation of all of his experiences and all of his trainings. There was only one way to defeat the master's attack, and that attack would trigger you either learning that technique or you would get killed by your master. You know, and so when you say that about these secrets of Muay Thai, that's what makes me think about that. As we kind of go ahead, Chike.
Oh no, I just thought that was funny. I just had kind of a silly thought. Because, you know, when you learn stuff, it's like, you got to repeat it before it becomes muscle memory. So what if in that cartoon, like, he did it that one time, he's like, I don't know if I can do it again. And the master's like, that's the last thing he hears before he slips away and dies.
Yeah.
It might have been for nothing. I don't know if he can repeat it.
I just killed my master. And I don't know if I can do this again. Don't know if I learned enough yet. So now in Muay Thai, you know, as we kind of wrap up our conversation, man, you know, obviously, you know, you can't fight forever. Now, are you done fighting, or do you plan on fighting again? What is the future looking like for you, Chike?
Not 100% sure. I've been doing a lot of jiu-jitsu recently.
Okay.
So, I don't believe I'll do Muay Thai again, but that's not to say I'd never fight again.
Sure.
I've done MMA fights before, and back then I had kind of no ground game.
Okay.
It was like that old school striker versus grappler thing that we talked about earlier. So it would be interesting to get in there now that I'm actually okay on the ground too.
Yeah. In terms of the physical demands of the sport of martial arts, you know, it seems like you get better with age to a certain point. So, you know, in at your age, or at least at our age, where do you see yourself? How long do you see yourself having that window to keep on competing at a high level?
I'm still just as strong. I'm a little bit stronger than I used to be.
Okay.
Still just as fast. And I've always thought about a style that was kind of future proof.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. I never wanted to have like this kind of hands down kind of flashy style where once you get to a certain age, you're just going to get caught.
I got you.
So I've always had like a safety first kind of style. So even if I did slow down a little bit, then I'd still be defensively sound, right?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I don't think I have a shorter shelf life as I could if I was just relying purely on physical abilities.
No, that makes sense.
But yeah. I will tell you this, so I've got my membership site, AskChike.com.
Okay, yeah.
And, on AskChike.com, like, you can subscribe to my newsletter. It gives you, like, tips and Muay Thai stuff like that. But that will be the first place that anybody finds out about whether or not I'm going to be in the ring again.
Okay.
So there's an announcement. that's where you're going to find it.
Okay. And yeah, let's talk about AskGK.com because, you know, I think we need to make sure we definitely highlight that because there are people just like yourself who are looking for, you know, a sport like Muay Thai, and they don't know where to start. And you are somebody who not only, you know, took a interest in Muay Thai, you went to the top of the sport. AskGK.com is a reflection of all your experience and all your knowledge sort of stewed down into a digital place where people can go and consume that information and learn about the sport and also pick up those tips and some of that expertise that may not be readily available to them in their gym.
Yeah, yeah. And so AskGK is a little bit interesting. It's like this kind of experiment that I started doing based on not just my fighting, but also my teaching. I've been an instructor in Muay Thai for several years. Pretty much right after I started fighting, I started teaching.
Okay.
And I remember one of the biggest criticisms I got as far as my teaching goes was my instructor pulled me to the side and said, you know, you don't have to show them so much. You don't have to. He's like, save that stuff for the private lessons. That's how you make your money. Just show them basic 1-2 kicks. And I thought that just felt kind of slimy to me. That I was just like holding these people back purposely just to try to get some extra money out of them. But then, you know, I was like, you know what? A lot of these people don't appreciate it anyway. So why? Why should I? So I started holding back a little bit. But it nagged me, so every once in a while, I would show them some really, really high-level technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And guess how many people would shadow box it and show me that remembered it the next week?
Oh, wow. How many people?
Like 1 out of 100, right? Oh. Like every like year, there'd be one guy who would maybe do it. So that made me realize, like, you know what? I don't even really have to, like, be secret about this stuff. I can just show it to everybody. And only the person that really needs to know it anyway, the only person that's really serious about it anyway,
sure,
is actually going to practice it and learn it.
Sure, sure.
So that's kind of philosophy behind AskGK. You know, Muay Thai is usually really a shroud of the secrecy, and, you know, they only give their techniques. A lot of times people only give their techniques, at least their best techniques, to people that they really think deserve to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But through my experience, if I just show it to everybody, half the people aren't going to pay attention. Half the people that think it's really cool and they do pay attention, they're still not going to practice it like they need to. They're going to,
sure,
do it 1 or 2 times and say, oh, I got it. And then they're never going to have it, really.
Okay.
It's the only thing, you know, the people that have this level of seriousness that I'm looking for, they're ever going to internalize it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like Dragon Ball Z, right, where Goku has to climb, I can't think of the name of that tower, but he has to climb that tower up to go and train with the cat that was on the top of the tower or whatever. And
oh, Snake Way.
No, it's not Snake Way. There's a tower.
Not Snake Way? Okay.
No, it's a tower. Yeah, there's like a tower that he started climbing when he was a kid, and he got up to the top and he had to, you know, basically train with his cat. And make a long story short, the metaphor I'm trying to get out of that is that only people who are super serious about training would dare embark on that journey. And in some ways, that's what it sounds like AskGK is. There's a spectrum there. You can go and learn some stuff and learn some really cool stuff that'll help you improve your Muay Thai. But if you're one of those crazy devoted people to the sport who will actually go as far as you're willing to take them, then those are the people who are going to glean the most from it.
Well, and you know, it's not to say that it's there's nothing you can get from it if you're not one of those kind of people, right?
Sure.
If you don't, I mean, you know, everybody has different motivations for doing Muay Thai, and everybody wants to be a world champion, right? And so if that's not your end goal, you just want to be a little bit better, then there's still stuff there. And there's still tons of stuff for you to learn. It's just like those kind of like super secret techniques,
mm-hmm,
you know, the ones that are basically invisible. Like you can see them and you don't know exactly what the person is doing or how they're doing it. And then and it seems like it's like kind of perpetual mystery. It's that kind of stuff that's also there.
Okay.
That it might be interesting for you to know, but if you really want to be able to do it, you're not gonna be able to do it unless you put in the work.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's a spectrum there. I know I've enjoyed going to AskGK youtube.com, just listening to some of your basic videos that just talk about different techniques and different approaches in the sport. And, you know, I'm not a Muay Thai fighter at all, but one thing I will say about your site is that you make it very approachable, and you can definitely tell that you teach this as a trainer, because it is approachable content. So if you're a beginner, you can go to askgk.com and learn a lot. If you're, a novice or intermediate, you can go there and learn. And if you're looking to be more advanced, that's the place for you. So I'm not just saying that and plugging that because you're my friend. You know, I'm really impressed what you've done, not only with your website, but obviously with your career as a fighter, man, because, you know, it's not an easy sport. It takes a lot of discipline, and there's no magic for that. You just have to wake up and do the work, and you did the work, and you're a world champion because of it.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about, Chike, before we get off the phone, man?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, it was really good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good catching up, man.
Absolutely. And yeah, no, I really like the work that you've been doing this podcast, and I look forward to hearing more stuff.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. And I appreciate you obviously making time to be a part of the conversation and can help my audience learn some of the secrets and insights of becoming a Muay Thai world champion kickboxer.
All right, cool. Sounds good.
Thank you, Chike Lindsay, for stopping by Culture and Conversations. Well, that brings our show to an end. If you guys want to follow along and get some of that great bonus content and interact with the show, you can do so on Facebook. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. If you're on Instagram and you want to interact on Instagram, feel free to do so at Culture and Conversations. Or if you just want to send an email to the show asking to be on the show, or just sending in some feedback and thoughts about the show, you can email cultureandconversations@gmail.com. Thank you guys for what you continue to do by supporting and downloading and listening to the show. Thank you for the likes. Thank you guys for sharing the content on Facebook and on other social media platforms. It really does help. It helps broaden the perspective of the show. And I hope that you guys will be around for the next episode of Culture and Conversations. And as usual, thank you guys for being part of the conversation.